Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women.
And these beers are going to come out of our Peters, son. I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
We're the Drunk Guys, and this week we are reading the final punishment book for 2024, Beyond Order, 12 More Rules for Life, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut by Jordan B. Peterson.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
And I'm
not
starting
Hanukkah.
With the beer because it's a Christmas, because this is a Christmas episode and I have a Christmas beer. What does it have to do with the book?
Actually, nothing, quite a bit because it's all Bible shit.
Well, it's not bloody true. Kwanzaa.
So this beer is called Santa Claus from Fat Orange Cat, and it is an imperial stout with cinnamon buns.
Oh, dear
Merry
God.
Christmas, gentlemen.
Delicious Christmas. Ooh,
one of the rules in the last book was to pet a fat orange cat if you see one. So
that's true.
Or any size cat.
I can't believe you remember that, since the entire book lacked any context for anything.
You're saying
just
it was
wait.
Not ordered? It's chaos.
It's beyond order.
This beer's pretty good. Yeah. Taste, does it, you know, cinnamon buns.
Strong hints of cinnamon bun.
You know, I want to say it kind of does, even though cinnamon buns aren't a super strong flavor.
Tastes like frosting.
They're just mainly a vehicle for butter and frosting.
It's for,
there's nothing wrong with that. That sounds great, but
as food should be.
They're just covered in the Pillsbury Doughboy's cum. That's what that stuff is on there.
Mm.
Speaking of cum, I heard this joke, Nate. I thought you'd like it. What do you call a bunch of ghosts scaring someone at the same time? A bukkake. Take that, reviewer who said I talk about bukkake too much. Okay, so...
That's a different thing.
That is different thing. Scary. So, Beyond Order Dome by Jordan B. Peterson.
Very mad, Max. He's mad about a lot of things.
He's mad to the max. It is... there's 12 more rules. And we said, if you didn't listen...
For
let's
dating
try not
my,
to repeat ourselves.
For dating my teenage daughter...
The original title was 12 Things I Hate About the Jews.
Oh, yeah.
So the reason why we're reading this is because we on the podcast have a tradition where for Christmas, we give each other the worst books we can find. That's the tradition. We punish each other with books. And last year... Mike and I teamed up to get Jimmy
this year,
who fucking deserved it, and we did both
right
12 Rules by Jordan Peterson and 12 More Rules, and we're finally getting to the second one. And if you stay tuned to the end of the episode, we are, because this is our Christmas episode, we are revealing our gifts for each other for the next year.
I took it easy on you guys this year, but my vengeance will be swift.
I'm hoping, I have never had a really bad one. I'm hoping this year I do.
This one was really bad.
I dug deep. This, but you knew, like, this is like, of course, this is going to suck. We'll get to those. So, the 12 rules, and as we said last time, this originated as a Quora post.
He just took another 12. Was it the same Quora post? Did he, like, not even...
Yeah, it has 40 or 42 rules or something on the Quora post.
He couldn't even bother to make another Quora post. That one still got gold in it, baby.
Try. This Quora post is evergreen. So he picked the next 12 that he felt like writing about, smoked a shit ton of peyote, and then just started typing.
Well, he wrote the first one during his ascent to, internet dickhead guru. And this one he wrote at a much darker time in his life. As he said in the very long intro.
The overture, Jimmy.
Yeah,
it's the overture.
Fucking overture. What a dick. Yeah.
That was unnecessary.
How he got addicted to benzos accidentally after whatever the fuck. And then he had to go to Russia to be put in a coma for benzo withdrawal. And also he's only eating meat and his daughter's ankle is broken and his wife is sick. So, I mean, honestly... There was a lot of bad things going on in the man's life.
It must have sucked.
It was
for sure.
Genuinely, you know, a lot. I understand why someone would get on some anti-anxiety meds for that. It makes perfect sense. If he was not the just relentless piece of shit that he is and has made other people, I would feel worse for him.
Well, Jimmy, tell us how you really feel about the man.
Listen to the first episode. We don't have to go through the backstory of Dr. Jordan Butthole Peterson. No one knows what the B stands for, so I'm just going to make it up every time.
You know what? Let's guess. I'll open up Wikipedia. What do you think it really stands for, Jimmy?
Balthazar.
Balthazar. It is Christmas. It's one of the wise men. Nate, you want to guess?
He thinks he's a wise man.
He's such a Gaspar.
I'm going to go with Bartholomew.
That was my second guess. Yeah, that's a good choice.
My guess was Brian.
That's not nearly interesting enough. It's Brian with a curious number of N's and not where you'd think they are.
It's like an Irish name. No, we are all wrong. It's Bernt. Bernt? B-E-R-N-T. It must be someone's maiden name.
No, it's because whenever he does a debate, he goes, "Oh, you're burnt."
sick burnt. As we call in Alberta. It's an Alberta. Oh, I'll burnt you.
What is it? The cheerleading movie?
Oh, Bring It On?
Bring It On, yeah.
Well, you know, it is bloody cold in here. So
he never explains in the book anything. Why it was Russia, even though the very first line is, "I woke up
because it's illegal
in
here."
Russia. Because the treatment he wanted to do was illegal in America.
They needed a Ukrainian blood boy.
They only do this experimental, you know, treatment for benzo withdrawal in Russia. So you know that maybe it's unsafe, but who knows? But he almost died. So, you know, came close, guys. But anyway.
Work harder with your voodoo doll next time, Jimmy.
Another steak, Jordan?
Now you're playing the long kind of killing him with arteriosclerosis.
It's not working fast enough. He's got another show on the Daily Wire now.
He has a new book out.
Oh, God.
I just read the review for it in The Economist today.
Even more 12 rules
for order.
No,
I was really
order.
Disappointed. It's not rules. You'll never guess the title of the book, but when you hear it, you'll go, "Oh, fuck him."
Postmodern Neo, a look at the Matrix. Through a right-wing lens.
We who wrestle with God. Oh, fuck that.
But not in a homosexual way, Greco-Roman style, but rather wordsly.
Well, as the book of John begins, "In the beginning was the Word, but I will have the last word and the million words before that last word."
And in the immortal words of Ghostface Killer, word is bond, as we all know.
And it's cash rules everything around me, including the loony. but this review had some great quotes. First, this is a friendly skirmish. The Canadian psychologist is less wrestling God than trying to understand him. He retells the big hits of the Bible through a mixture of theology, psychology, and symbolism. Often, alas, that symbolism comes from Disney. So the story of Adam and Eve is compared to Beauty and the Beast, while Cain is likened to Evil Scar in Lion King.
So the like this book.
The overall effect is as if a Victorian vicar had been giving a subscription to Disney Plus and possibly some opium and then sat down to write his sermon.
Probably just a fistful of benzos.
So that just came out, and I was like, ooh, should I double down and pick that as a punishment? Like, I can't. I still had to read the last rule today. I was like, fuck that. I can't do that to me. So do we want to start with the rules? Anything else in the overture?
We tried that last year, and we got through about half of them, or last time we got half of them before it just evolved into, much like his book, not being about the rules at all. So that's fine. We'll try.
Right. Rule one, do not carelessly denigrate social institutions or creative achievement. In red, and if you just period, great. Sounds awesome. Totally on board. No problem.
This is one of those books where the table of contents is the meat.
Yeah. And like the last book, every rule is a reasonable sounding thing, which he will follow up with several examples of patients he's had who are probably made up.
Oh my God, so made up. Or you question his ability to be a psychologist.
Yeah, like that doesn't seem okay to be doing. And then he'll ramble about stuff that is unrelated for about 47,000 pages, and in the last two paragraphs, they'll talk about the rule.
But having built in, this house, the last sentence is always the rule again.
Yes. Sometimes the sometimes just the one last paragraph instead of the last two, if he's really on a roll down Bullshit Mountain. But yeah, occasionally, towards the end, he talks about it a little bit. And if it had just been those paragraphs, this would have been a perfectly reasonable book, because none of these rules are crazy.
No, they're all, as we said last time, they're just things that already existed. Like,
just
found another way to say some very time-tested policy.
But it has his own spin on it, which is usually just a load of gibberish.
He spends a lot of time just straight up tossing word salad. And by that, I mean it eats ass. But that's what he does. It's just
the good way.
Not in the good way. No syrup. And so he starts with this, and you're like, I know what this is about. We should say that the first book came out when he was ascendant, you said. It sold 10 million copies. So nobody was fucking editing this.
Oh, yeah.
They were just print it, baby. That's, if we edit it, that's time for this guy's fucking star to fade. This book, oh my God, there's so many lines I highlighted. But he's clearly, I thought when he said this rule, he's going to talk about like the bloody Marxists who are critical of everything of society, right? Like denigrating social institutions and saying like, look at the, I don't know, white supremacist or patriarchal or whatever. I thought that's where he was going to go. I was like, all right, that's a pretty standard conservative kind of thing. But no, he goes to the Bible.
Yeah, I don't even know where he went, to be honest. It was just like last book, every rule is full of stuff where it's like, why are you talking about this? What does this have to do with the rule?
So he starts off with a whole thing about loneliness and being confused.
The man who was angry and he just needed to talk, and then he did stand-up comedy and wrote poetry because Jordan just let him talk and said nothing in return?
Well, this is where Jordan demonstrates his true lack of self-awareness. He says, quote, I soon noticed, however, that things worked out quite well during our sessions if I kept mostly quiet. Oh, why didn't you do that more?
I highlighted a bunch of stuff in this book that was things Jordan Peterson says but does not adhere to.
Almost
speaking
all
of which, let me bring one of those up, okay?
Please,
because,
yes, please
I
do.
Mean, we could do a million of these, but, okay.
Because there are literally a million.
book, and so the first book is, you know, has this whole thing about order and chaos, and in this book, he kind of only mentions it a little bit, but in the first book, though this is still an extension of that, in the first book, he says, that, oh, well, order is, first of all, order is masculine, but also order is goodness in your family, and, you know, blowjobs, and chaos is you know, people being dicks, and, you know, just anyway.
And
so
butt herpes.
My point is that he just lists all the things that are order and all the things that are chaos, and it's clearly like everything you think is good is order, and everything you don't like is chaos, and it's just kind of like you're just putting shit in categories because you feel like it, and using that as a system to like explain the world. And, oh, he said the exact same thing. Yep, there we go. So he wasn't talking about his own system. He was criticizing Freud for relating everything to sex. But he's about to say Freud focused everything on sex, and that's just too simple, which is exactly what he's doing. So, okay, here's this quote. Freud, as we noted, attempted to reduce motivation to sexuality, to libido. The same can be done quite effectively by anyone sufficiently literate, intelligent, and verbally fluent. This is because, quote, sexuality, like any multifaceted single term, can be defined as tightly or as loosely as necessary by those who use it for comprehensively explanatory purposes. Skipping a little, in this manner, the single explanatory principle can be extended indefinitely in keeping with the demands placed upon it. That's exactly what he's doing with this whole thing about order and chaos. Except he's not even doing it well, because he's just rambling most of the time. But yeah. I like how Freud agrees with me. I mean, how Jordan Peterson agrees with me.
I wrote down this one, which says, when you are tightly boxed in or cornered, all too often by your own stubborn and fixed adherence to some unconsciously worshipped assumptions, all there is to all there is to help you is what you have not yet learned. Everything he talks about is based on his assumption that myths are the great truth tellers of the human condition, and so everything is a symbol for a puss, and those are bad, and penises are good. But not in a gay way.
True?
It says it in the Bible, the bloody Bible, and Set.
Yeah.
And Horace.
Yeah, the King James mistranslated it. It's actually the Book of Hand Job. Oh, man. I don't even know. I did it for one rule. I took notes. I have a piece of paper where I was scribbling on the train. Like, I'm trying to trace this argument. Like, what is the rule? What is his data or whatever?
His train of thought is not a train. It's like two guys on a hand cart, and there's dynamite every 10 feet, and it's like a cartoon.
Yeah, but they're doing that, that pump hand cart thing.
Yeah, that thing. And just like, oh, look out.
But there are no tracks.
And they're in the ocean.
They're in a sinkhole, yeah. So I did it for rule three, which is do not hide unwanted things in the fog.
Sure.
Which is like, I'm sure there's another way of saying that, like, confront things, address things, like things you see the light. The
little best bullshit adds
sunshine
up.
Is the best disinfectant, or something like that. You know, just like some variation of that. Here's what he did. Okay, so that rule is clear cut. He then starts with a story about his father-in-law, who's really cool and is 80 something years old and is a widower, and he bottled up some petty grievances. About how his wife made him lunch on plates that were too small, but he didn't tell her for like 20 years. And then he abruptly told her one day, and then they all had a laugh about it later. So you're like, is lunch the fog? Then, flash cut, JBP has a client whose husband was a vain asshole, and she didn't like his ideas of interior decorating.
So did you notice that all of the clients, except for one, were women who were just kind of silly? And or except for
one
the gay
was
guy.
A gay guy.
Or the gay guy. A gay guy or women. And they were all just like, and he doesn't say it specifically, but I feel like he's at least implicating women for just like not being smart. I think that's, or just.
Well, the first one was the guy who was angry because no one listened to him. I guess because women are mean. Until he wrote poetry, which I guess in Jordan's mind maybe makes him a woman. I don't know.
It makes him like
poetry is chaos feat, because it doesn't have to rhyme anymore.
Bloody stanzas. But hold on, he's not done. So this woman's like, I don't like how my husband likes pop art from the 60s. And he's kind of a dick. So then he starts going on this whole thing about self-deception and Freud and repression and how Freud is wrong because he doesn't consider that sins of omission are just as bad as sins of commission. And that's the proverbial fog, which I struggle to fully follow, but I think means don't be wishy-washy with your thoughts with yourself, not other people. So like, the rule, you're like, oh yeah, be open. It's like, no, be open with yourself inside and be direct and honest with your partner by using I statements. And then he gets into some thing about events and memories, and they accumulate, and if they're unorganized, they become chaos. So don't hide things in the fog. I tried. That's the best I could do. That is incoherent still. Those are not. That is not a logical progression of things like that.
There's no logic to any of this.
But it's not, it's like, you know, sometimes you, especially when you know, we're like taught in school how to write an essay and, you know, it's very concrete. Like my first thing, evidence, my second piece of evidence. But then you read a better writer and they're not so roadmap-y about it. And then like you get to the end and you're like, oh, that's where all the threads come together. This is like a fraying cable that like a rock climber is holding on to, and they're like, oh no, just hold on till the chopper gets here. And you could see the threads just going in opposite directions of each other. It's like the beginning of Cliffhanger starring Sylvester Stallone, and That's how he forms an argument. So when I was chapter three, then I was like, I'm not going to give a shit for the rest of this book. I will read the words. They will assault my eyes, and maybe some of it will penetrate my brain.
You got further than I did then. He made a rule three before you stopped caring.
I just thought, this one seems obvious. I could figure it out. Clearly, I am too stupid to understand this book.
So for most of the rules, he's trying to explain sort of, or badly. He's badly explaining, but trying to explain sort of what it is and why it's important. But he never gets into how you're supposed to do it. With the exception of one rule. There's one rule where he actually has some more, like, you know, specific advice about how to do it, which is the
romance
about,
one.
Yeah, the romance one, the one about marriage. Other than that, they're really he's just talking about like what it is and why. But the thing is, the rule itself is completely fine. You know, there's nothing wrong with it. Not complaining about the rule itself. So I didn't need to be convinced that hard about it. But he doesn't really the reason why self-help books are much more helpful when they're about how to do it. I mean, especially if it's effective advice, you know, that also helps a lot. But how you do it, because there are a million things you have to focus on as a person, and you can't possibly learn everything or do everything well. So tell me how I can do this thing that you've convinced me is important, but he never gets to that. Never at all, except for that one chapter, which made the book pointless because he was really just him rambling as he's on as he's withdrawing from his drugs.
Well, you know, like all self-help books are basically repackaging the same shit that some people just intuit and some people fucking never figure out or never can manage. But they all have to have their own angle. Like, what was it? The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. I'm sure we could go back and look at it. A lot of the like advice are similar to these rules in one way or another.
It was just don't pay attention to things that are unimportant for your goals.
Right.
There, that's the whole book.
But it was like,
that was one of Jordan Peterson's rules. I think that was rule.
Yeah, that was rule two.
Yep, there you go.
Imagine who you could be and aim single-mindedly at that. But then he never talks about that. And that's also really fucking similar to a rule in book one, which is like find the heaviest thing you can lift and carry it or something like that.
Also, imagine who you could be and then aim single-mindedly at that. Reasonable advice. It does not tell you, how do you know what to aim for?
And he doesn't give any examples. Like, here's the story of a guy.
He gives examples, but they're of stuff that's irrelevant.
Right, but it's not like, it's like here was a guy who was a bus driver, or she, you know, and she was a lunch lady, but she wanted to be a fucking poet, and then she went to open mic nights, and she got a coat, and she just did this, and then eventually she won an award. Like that's the kind of story you'd expect, but instead it's just like
he's talking about Jesus a lot. Harry Potter.
Oh, Harry Potter, which he clearly doesn't understand Harry Potter.
No, he really doesn't. Or Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, both of them. And because he's trying to put on his like Jungian, like, you know, hero worship kind of stuff onto it, and it's like, what if it was just, because he's explaining Harry Potter is about blah, blah, blah. What if that was just a nice story? I forget now what he said about Harry Potter because I really.
The Harry Potter
like
he writes about the rules of Quidditch because he's a fucking idiot.
Oh, yeah. Because Quidditch is satire of.
Cricket.
Yeah, there you go. It's satire of cricket and designed to not make sense. Like, Quidditch isn't supposed to make sense as a sport.
The one that. It was just like, I'm not a huge Lord of the Rings fan, but I, you know, everyone knows it. He wrote this, and Harry, like Bilbo, can only perceive the serpent when it's invisible to everyone else because he has a dark side. Tolkien's Bilbo must become a thief before he become a hero. He must incorporate his monstrousness so that he can supersede his naive harmlessness before he is tough enough to face the terrors that confront him. What the fuck? No, he did not. No, that's not the point of that at all.
Yeah, it wasn't like Bilbo was some upright citizen beforehand. He was like, I would never steal. And then he's like, damn it, I have to just this once. It
he's just a sneaky guy. And also, like, the point of Lord of the Rings is that there are absolute goods and evils. They're just like the good guys and the bad guys, and they do the good things. Stealing from an evil guy is not evil.
More relativist bullshit like a Marxist. But the
postmodern.
The thing about Harry Potter, though, is the whole fucking point of Harry Potter is destiny. You don't have to aim at anything if it's your destiny.
You can try and avoid it, and it'll happen anyway.
That's what the Greeks were always fucking talking about.
It was seven books of things happening to that child.
Well, Ron was aiming at his destiny to get all of his pee-pee in the toilet one day.
Pissing on
and
that
jerking
rat.
Off in front of that rat.
And that girl in the bathroom.
Oh, moaning Myrtle, yeah.
That's Freudian.
Yeah, it is. It's
why do you spend so much of this book like disproving Freud when everyone else has done this decades ago? Like it's some what a bold take, Jordan.
And he kind of believes in it. And
yeah, he keeps bringing it up.
He keeps bringing it up. And when one of his clients he talks about in the later part of the book, he's like, she had a classic Freudian hysteria. He like literally called it
crazy
that.
Lady syndrome. Maybe it's because a criticism of the first book is like, he's like really into Freud, and isn't that mostly bullshit? So maybe he was trying to show that he's not slavishly devoted to Freud by offering some critiques of him. But
like the first book had way more of his like, you know, what he's known for about like culture war shit. This book was more just like, honestly, it was mostly the Bible and how it related in no way to his rules. And some stuff about, like, one or two other myths, but it's just, like, it was more just rambling bullshit.
Yeah.
Speaking of rambling bullshit.
Oh, well.
Let's play a game.
Yeah.
Let's play a game called read a passage, read a couple sentences, and we, the other, we guess, what rule is he talking about? And I'm I didn't really highlight very much, so I'm actually just going to.
One in 12 chance, guys.
I'm going to just pick something. Hope, of course, can drive us through the pain of negotiation, but hope is not enough. You need desperation as well, and that is part of the utility of till death do us part. Oh, I actually just gave it away. You know.
Oh, I was going to say do what you hate. Do not do what you hate until you're that part.
I thought
that
it was notice opportunity lurks where responsibility has been abdicated. But
with his curious definitions of responsibility.
What were those again? Women's just, work and men's work.
No, he has a bunch of weird shit in here. It was like, rules exist because responsibility is good. But if you don't have rules making these things happen, then no one will have any responsibilities. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Circular. Yeah.
All right, let me try this one more time. Finally, a school of thought emerges to propagate the methods of this algorithmic reduction, parentheses, particularly when the thinker is hoping to attain dominance in the conceptual and the real world. And those who criticize refuse to adopt the algorithm or who criticize its use are tacitly or explicitly demonized.
I'm going to go with abandon ideology.
Try to make one room in your home as beautiful as possible.
This is actually abandoned ideology.
Damn. There you go. Who's secretly a Peterson fanboy?
Anything where he talks about like debating stuff, that chapter he kind of had like a theme going, but that was in some ways the worst one because what the fuck, like he's a fucking ideologue. He talks the whole time about abandoning ideology and like ideologues are, you know, bullshit, but he is one of the biggest ideologues out there right now.
I hate that the chapters have subtitles, so I can't fucking easily find it. Oh, that was the one where he talked a lot about Nietzsche, and it's like, Nietzsche says God is dead. He doesn't mean it. You're like, well, yeah. Sure.
Sorry, God.
I will say I took a college class that was on Nietzsche. I was like, I didn't understand a fucking goddamn thing the entire semester. Because the professor basically talked like this, like Jordan Peterson. He was just like rambling about that and then just ran like, well, that's kind of what Hegel is saying. And then you're like, oh, fuck you, man.
If you say so.
Yeah. Just if you name one more dead kraut, I'll get it. There's some other things. Let me find my notes and try to make sense of them.
Here. It is worthwhile thinking of these commandments as a minimum set of rules for a stable society, an iterable social game. The commandments are rules established in the book of Exodus and part of that unforgettable story.
I do remember that line because it's like the unforgettable story of Moses. Like, did he just like blurb the book of Exodus?
He did. What a read.
I laughed. I cried.
I kvetched.
All right, I'm going to go with that's rule 7. Work as hard as you possibly can on at least
that
one thing.
That is rule 7.
Oh, what?
Shit. We read this book too closely.
I was literally guessing completely randomly that one.
Okay. You had as good a chance as any.
Here's one you guys can guess, but also something that's just not true of many things he says. Right-wing Jews, Islamic hardliners, and ultra-conservative.
It's a great beginning to any sentence. You know you're going to get gold when
walk
you
into a bar.
Oh, yeah.
out of what? Right-wing Jews, Islamic hardliners, and ultra-conservative Christians must admit, if pushed, that God is essentially mysterious. No, they don't. No, they fucking absolutely don't need to do that,
yeah,
and many
they're
won't.
Pretty explicit about it not being that.
I'm like, no, I get it. I fucking completely get it.
It's fucking literally written down.
But this is a great example. You want to guess what that's from? Let me figure out what chapter that is.
Ooh, I'm going to go with imagine who you could be and then aim single-mindedly at that.
Not being a ultra-conservative Jew? Nope, sorry, it's not that.
I don't know. It could be. I don't imagine that I could be one of those, so I have to aim single-mindedly at not doing that.
That is also from abandoned ideology, but it's a great example of the writing where it's he writes like somebody who has to hit a word count. So, and he thinks by over-explaining and providing like 3 near synonyms in a row makes you sound smarter, you know, like the tall, lengthy, and elongated structure. You're like, oh, I guess those are all slightly different words, but like not necessary. So here it says, they must admit, if pushed. You don't need the if pushed. Like, just like, if pushed, they'll say that. Like, he's just like, no editor touched this. There's an even better example much later in the book where my note is, who the fuck edited this? I wrote. he wrote, the great German writer Goethe, who is to Germanic culture what Shakespeare is to English, wrote a famous play, Faust, the story of a man who sells his soul to the devil for knowledge. Like,
what?
First off, Goethe's fucking famous. You don't need to really tell us who he was. Faust is his most probably well-known book, and that or like The Sorrows of Young Werner, whatever the fuck that one was called. You don't need to put him in the context of Shakespeare. And you don't need to tell us he wrote a famous play, and then you're going to tell us all about the famous play for the rest of the paragraph. This is like when he's like, and that's why I really, really, really liked this book. Because 100 words on the nose. That's how a child writes.
The Eagles, who of course were the Beatles of the 70s, wrote a very famous song, Hotel California, about can't stay there. You know, but, you know,
you
Penny Lane.
Staying in California, comma, the Golden State named after the Gold Rush, comma, also the name of a Neil Young album, comma.
Who was in Crosby, Stills, and Nash and Young, who was in a TV show pilot with Keira Sedgwick, who was married to Kevin Bacon, 6 Degrees. Okay.
So, like, that was what was like an egregious one to me. Like, no good writer would write that sentence, right? And then shortly afterward, this one.
But
really,
you said no good writer.
Oh, well, yeah, no true Scotsman. Such a viewpoint is more widespread. Just think about this sentence for a second. It doesn't matter what he's talking about. Such a viewpoint is more widespread, comma, in my opinion, comma, than you might think, comma, although perhaps rarely held for long. He has an opinion
comma,
of what I might think. He needs to tell me his opinion of what I might think. A viewpoint that is more widespread in his opinion than I might think is that all people should die.
Oh, is this the lady who thought that life wasn't worth living because of climate change, and so she was an ideologue?
I don't remember what triggered this, but it was in the context of him talking about school shooters and like the Columbine kids, and he's like, their writing was interesting,
oh,
though shitty.
Yeah. Yeah, he said, like, it's a very common belief that everyone should die. Like, that is not a common belief, man. No.
Those were troubled kids who played a lot of Doom and shot people. Then he's like, they had...
Duke Nukem. I
thought it was Doom.
It was Doom and Duke Nukem. They were around at the same time, but...
Duke Nukem would never convince you to kill people. Duke Nukem was all about, like, titties way to, shit. Like, celebrate life.
So, Duke Nukem was obviously a little bit of a satire, but... In the game Duke Nukem, you could plant pipe bombs or one of the weapons. You could plant them and then set them off later. But if they were like within a certain range of each other, they would go off automatically. And the Columbine kids, Dylan Klebold and Eric Harris, they did that in the school. They literally planted. They literally put pipe bombs at a regular spacing down like a hallway or something, thinking that they would go off. One goes off, and there would multiple go off.
Oh, they did it thinking that Duke Nukem was the rules were real?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
That's how we know they played Duke Nukem, other than the fact that we know they played.
I also know that they had made some sort of like custom edit levels of Doom that macabre people still trade around on the internet to play like the Dylan Klebold cut of Doom. But yeah, it turns out that they weren't smart kids.
I have one. This is a really easy one, guys. Really easy. You aim at something. You develop a strategy in relationship to that aim, and then you implement it. And then, as you implement the strategy, you observe that it is working. That is what produces the most reliable positive emotion. Which one is that?
You know, I think you're trying to trick us into thinking it's imagine who you could be and aim single-mindedly at that. But I think this is from much later in the book, because there's a part where I was like, I think he's trying to hypnotize us. Like, he's trying to...
You are partially correct, because that does explicitly sound like Rule 2, right? That sounds like more like Rule 2 than anything that's in the Rule 2 section. But that is from Rule 4, notice that opportunity lurks where responsibility has been abdicated.
So there's a part where he talks about hypnotism, but I couldn't understand it. But then he says... Later on, you know, you might begin to consider this. You might think about that. And he says, what you see upon waking is an array of possibilities, many of them concerning the day at hand and the others associated with the weeks, months, and years to come. And I thought for a second, maybe the whole point of this book is for people who are like amenable to being hypnotized or whatever. You fall asleep reading it, and then he plants ideas
listening to
in
the
your
audiobook,
head.
That will hypnotize you.
And occasionally, except when he cries out in a yelp of Canadian anguish, it's bloody terrible. Did he cry on the audiobook?
I did do the audiobook, yeah, because I'm not fucking reading this shit. This is to punish Jimmy. because I also listened to the audiobook for the other one, there were little short passages in the other audiobook where he was so moved by his own words that he was about to cry. Like, literally, you could hear him, dick. Like, choking up as he's reading his own words about, I don't know, probably benzos, but...
Well, he was grateful in spite of his suffering, Nate. That's what it was. Did he yell at all? I like when he yells. Mad.
Oh, they had to use that compressor a lot because he spent a lot of time yelling.
He turns green. He's like, you wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
He would bellow whole passages just because he's so upset. This one less. Like the second one, because he's probably still recovering. He was probably still recovering from his like. He's probably still on some significant medication, and so he didn't yell or cry in this one. He also probably didn't care as much.
Oh, he was just
because he just churned it out. He probably took an advance from his editor. He probably took an advance from his publishing company after the first one was doing well, a big one. And then he got really sick. And then he's like, oh, fuck, I really have to write this now. Ugh.
I owe millions in rubles and medical bills. but, you know, yet, you know, I have to drink this beer. I don't care. I just don't care. If you follow his rules, you might grow up to be a Big Boy. That's the name of this beer. It's Big Boy for me. New brewery for us called Somerset Brewing, which is near me, near where I live. And they let me buy kegs now. So there goes the college money for the children. That's a double IPA. It's very good. Nate, you had it, I think, when you were here the other day.
Cool. Yeah.
It was good. Beer. It was beer. It went down. made the alcohol happen. Any other rules that stuck out to you guys, or ones you're gonna like follow going forward?
So I was listening to it, and within 2 minutes of him saying the rule at the start of the chapter, I could not tell you what the rule was that he was talking about. And I can't, and nor did I go back to look it up.
Because he tells you at the end.
Exactly, yeah. I'm going to figure it out by the end. I mean, I would occasionally. There were a couple of times where I was halfway through a track. No, there were two times I was halfway through a track, and I'm like, what is he talking about? I actually rewound it all the way to the beginning to be like, what rule is this? But those were both near the beginning of the book. And then after that, I was like, I am not doing that again. I really just clearly, there's nothing. There's no connection.
One that stood out to me in terms of being really stupid, do not allow yourself to become resentful, deceitful, or arrogant, in which he begins to talk about the woman who is vegan, but he cures her of her sadness by taking her to a butcher and a farm, and then she's not scared of meat anymore, and she sees that animals aren't humans. And then they watch an embalming at a funeral home. Can you do that? Do they just let you in and watch? I don't think that you're supposed to do that.
Well, he said that he called a guy, and it's like, hey, can we come watch? And he said yes, so.
Yeah, well, like, what about the family of the dead person?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It just seems so weird. I'm not even sure what he was trying to cure her of in the end.
Oh, just being a silly woman, I think. That's yeah, pretty
much. That, her mind was chaos.
What about the woman who was like, I was molested as a child by my cousin, and his response is, how old was the cousin? She's like, I was 4 and they were 6. Like, that wasn't really, that was different. That was like,
have you tried getting the fuck over it?
That was just like the parent. That was like, that kid was a kid too, you know? She's like, it really haunts me. He's like, yeah, I get that over. Yeah, it's fine.
If you recontextualize abuse,
think of that kid suffering,
then you're okay.
You also took his cherry. Like, oh, thanks, Doc.
Well, the best one, of course, was the definitely real gay black man who told his parents that all adults were actual angels.
And all mental illness is demons?
Yeah, it was just like he didn't understand that people could be evil. And so he was getting into sleep paralysis and cringing so hard that he couldn't sleep. And then Jordan Peterson's like, I better make him read books about Nazis and Nanking, and then he can see that people are evil.
Yeah, he makes him read Ordinary Men and The Rape of Nanjing. He's like, get over it, Nancy.
And then he's like, oh, I was remembering the time my boyfriend almost threw a lamp at me. By the way, did I mention that I'm gay and black?
He said blackly. But dude, you know what? Sleep paralysis is fucking terrifying. Have you ever had that? It's a horrible experience.
Well, have you tried reading Ordinary Men?
I have read it, actually, and it was upsetting. I don't know if it... You know what? I can't say I've had sleep paralysis since I read it. Maybe I'm not really sure. I found another example of just... this was another rule I really liked. Make something in your house beautiful, that rule, right? Make one room as beautiful as possible. He never defines beauty, or he kind of tries to, right? That's like the point. It's like, what is beauty? And
I think it's 60s pop art. What that guy was doing?
That's a different rule.
That was about not letting shit slide in your marriage.
Yeah, but that guy was making a room beautiful, and now he's shitting on it. So,
well, because it wasn't actually beautiful, because it was really, you know, it was kitschy, and like, who listens to the Archies?
That guy was into it as a statement of what the fuck, like social status. It wasn't for beauty's sake. It was to show off that he was important and had money for art and was doing popular things. And also because that wasn't real.
That was a fake story. Yes.
But then, well, because he says like in the beginning, I changed all the details so they're unrecognizable. It's like, well, then these stories probably don't really work the same way. It's like there was a...
It was actually a collection of hand-engraved potholders.
There was a man who was married to a woman, and she collected Revolutionary War spoons. Some from the Franklin Mint or some bullshit. But
Buffalo Nichols.
It can be overwhelming to open ourselves up to the beauty in the world that we as adults have painted over with simplicity. He seems to think that beauty is just like nostalgia. Because he goes on about, when I was a kid, I knew every house on my block and all the bricks. And, you know, now I don't even know my neighbor because we live in the modern world and, like, we don't do that. It's like, that's...
He would love the art of, who's that guy who farms out those Christian, I just heard a podcast about this guy. He likes like the super, super like saccharine art.
Thomas Kinkade?
Yes.
He's dead, that guy. He's the Tupac of painting. He's from beyond the grave.
He's like the top selling artist of all time because he just farms out.
He's the painter of light, Jimmy.
Yeah, but it's all trash.
It's, but, you know, some are worse than others.
Well,
my wife's parents have a
They would make prints, and then he would just paint. He would have someone paint like a little bit on the print, and so then you could say legally, this is a painting.
Those are hand embellished lithographs. That's what they're called. They make a poster, but they don't call it a poster. It's a giclée on paper. I'm like, oh, how fancy.
I do giclée.
I have been to several cruise ship art auctions. I know exactly what this guy is.
That's exactly his demographic.
Oh yeah, and he's always there's always Thomas Kinkade on those cruise ship art auctions. Him and Peter Max, which they suck this guy's dick. But how great Peter Max painted the Woodstock poster with like the bird sitting on the guitar headstock. If you've seen him, like, oh
yeah,
and it does a lot of pop art stuff. And now he's like a 90-year-old man with dementia, so he doesn't do much anymore. But you go and they're like, it's an original Peter Max, it's $15,000. And they're like, he's a legend. And you're like, who the fuck's buying that? And then we came home from a cruise and they saw like, this weekend at the Short Hills Mall in Paramus, Peter Max. I was like, oh wait, that's a fucking shopping mall in New Jersey. Not serious. But Thomas Kinkade is the kitschiest, corniest fucking thing. It's all like
true beauty.
I mean, they're fine paintings. They're just not like high art. They're just like, it's a cottage in the woods with light coming out of the windows. Nate's looking it up. He's like, my parents have 7 of these.
My parents definitely. Oh my God. No, I'm just. Wow, these are really stupid.
It's like Norman Rockwell.
No, this is like AI makes this. Like, this is not. Oh, Thomas Kinkade Studio. Oh, no, it's literally Disney. Okay, this is literally Bill.
And, oh, there's a bunch here where it's like a cottage in the woods, but then like Huey, Dewey, and Louie are sitting in front of it.
This is Moana. Okay, great. Thomas Kinkade Disney Gallery. Yeah,
He died before Moana came out.
So, wow, yeah. No, yeah, these are dumb. Who's the other one?
Peter Max. Yeah, Peter Max's stuff. You're like, oh, that's fine.
Well, for Peterson, one thing that he mentioned is the art he has in his house. There was an interview with him.
Soviet art he collects, right?
He collects Soviet art.
Yeah.
Not because of its beauty, because it reminds him of all his enemies out there. He's like, you have to remember that these people are out there trying to destroy you. And it's like,
and if it's not in your living room, then you'll forget about them.
The neo-Marxists are coming for us, so I have to keep these fucking Stalin art in my home at all times to remind me of the oncoming terror. It's like, that's an insane thing to do, man.
I mean, you do you. I'm not going to judge. That doesn't make any sense to me. That's the least crazy thing, honestly, in this book.
I can at least kind of follow the logic. It just seems stupid. But there's more logic to it than anything in this book.
It's like an over-intellectualized version of like the goth kid who's like, it's a reminder of death.
It's like, I leave this string wrapped around my wrist so I can remember that my mother is dead. Like, what?
Every time I look at the string, it reminds me I need to masturbate.
It's so I can choke my wrist while I do it.
Just like mom wanted. I both wish I took better notes, and I wish I took zero notes at all.
I mean, the notes is everything. Like, I wrote down, I highlighted a bunch of stuff, but it's all just like, what does this mean? Or why did he say this?
Oh, I just found this other quote about the gay black Canadian man. This line is in there for no reason at all. His parents, immigrants to Canada from the southern United States, were uneducated to a marked degree. Like, is that a pun? Marked degree? They're uneducated? Is that what he's doing? Is it a dad joke?
Marxist degree?
Oh, shit. And they're marked because they're the descendants of Cain. That's why they're black. And I love that he tells, like, your rose-colored view of the world is stupid. Read this book about the Holocaust. The guy's like, thank you, doctor. I'm cured. I'm also not gay now. No, that doesn't happen. But, you know, he wanted to include that.
I'm not gay or real.
Find another passage of just, why did you use this many words? I have a friend of Scandinavian descent, although he is Canadian. He married a Canadian woman, also of Scandinavian descent. It's like a word problem. They decided to get married.
How many were going to St. Ives?
The train left at 12:30, going 12 miles, 14 miles an hour.
What is the probability of getting one pair of red socks? But because they decided to get married in Sweden as a tribute to their joint ancestry. So why did he have to say Scandinavian twice if they are Swedish? Why did that? Right? Why would you say that? Why would he? It's just like, He felt the need to consult the thesaurus every time. Like, there's another word I could use right now. Let me make sure I use both, just to be safe.
They were from a country next to Norway, but not Norway.
The bloody Den-Marxists.
Two of my meatball enthusiast descendant friends.
I did see something funny. Someone said, white people be like, you got to try the meatballs at the furniture store. Oh my god, what is this? Oh, I guess this unintentionally funny line. This is how he just starts a paragraph. My wife told me a terrible story once. Just like, yeah, it's your wife. Their stories are always terrible.
She's and chaos.
It is all about a woman at, because like his wife is a saint too, and she was volunteering at like a hospice. And there was a woman cutting her husband's fingernails, but purposely cutting him so he'd bleed.
It's like, oh, God, yeah. What the fuck?
Like some sort of Chinese legalism torture. The death by a thousand cuts.
Of the fingernail.
And he's like, can you believe what a petty bitch? This guy's dying of bladder cancer or something, and she's nicking his... Maybe she was just old and shitty at it.
Maybe she couldn't see very well.
Yeah, like... I can't. That would be an incredible thing for her to do that on purpose to every finger. You'd almost be like, you know what? He must have deserved it.
Yeah, she's saying he was doing it. She was doing it because he had like abused her for their whole life, and now that he was, you know, in an invalid, she was cutting his fingernails aggressively to get back at him.
I feel like more likely she would have just fucking left him there. It's like he's dying now.
Yeah. Like all those anecdotes, they don't make any fucking sense, and they are highly unrealistic.
All right, so who should read it?
An editor?
No one should read this.
Yeah, I agree. No one.
Like, if you're into Jordan Peterson, first of all, there's still time. You can get out. You're still young.
Send help.
Yeah, you can do better. You're not getting anything from him. You couldn't get something better from elsewhere. I mean, this one wasn't as aggressively ideological, maybe because abandoned ideology was a rule he didn't stick to in this. Though he did sneak in some bullshit, whereas, like, I wrote this one down, because this was like, oh, fuck off, Jordan. It was, it is impossible to fight patriarchy, reduce oppression, promote equality, transform capitalism, save the environment, eliminate competitiveness, reduce government, or to run every organization like a business. Such concepts are simply too low resolution. It's like, what? You can do all those things. No one's saying, like, I'm going to do this and I have no concrete ideas beyond the general concept. That's not how people are. Like, he's saying bullshit. He's talking out of his ass.
Yeah, he's like the opposite of a puppet.
All of these rules are similarly vague.
The rules, I feel like guiding principles for life need to be pretty vague. Right? It can't be like hyper specific. They're like, on Tuesdays, eat rutabaga. Like, I was like, that's not really helpful.
Keeps you regular.
Yeah, they need to be kind of vague that you get adapted to. Like, oh yeah, I see how this applies to my life. So the rules are fine, but the explanations I really tried for the first, I want to say, 7 rules.
I'm gonna set off the entire book with this one quote, for which my only note was, "What the fuck are we even talking about anymore?" This was from order. This is from Rule 11: Do not allow yourself to become resentful, deceitful, or arrogant. If the night sky is chaos, the ocean nature, and the island culture, then the individual, hero and adversary, is one brother locked in combat with his twin in the middle of the aisle. What?
See, when he says the island culture, he's clearly talking about Jamaica. The second clue is when he talks about brethren. It's like, go and be Irie, brethren. And he's like, aha, see? Chaos.
The problem with this fucking book is that he has these bullshit rules, and then he says a bunch of gibberish about, you know, circle jerking with himself into his own mouth, some sort of philosophy that is just gibberish about nothing. And then he uses myths like they're evidence, but myths are not evidence of stuff. That's not how that works. Like, oh, and those people made up a story, and therefore this is the way humans are, which you can use for some like vague things about like the nature of how civilization came to be, sure, but
or like vague things of like this shows what people were afraid of, or like this represents danger to people, like dragons or darkness, you know, because like that's where bad things could have been.
Yeah, it's a crazy thing to base your entire life on, and to tell other people to base their lives on. And also, he is, for a man who fervently believes that myths are the source of all human wisdom and should be, you know, regarded as ultimate truths, he is stunningly uninterested in the myths of over half of the earth.
He only likes the myths of J.K. Rowling and Greece.
It's like, more people then not come from places where these are not their myths of like ancient Greece and the Bible. Like, he doesn't know fuck all about Asian myths at all, or India. That's half of the earth alone. And he's just like, and then some brown people, some weird shit. Africa doesn't even fucking exist to him. It's like, if you're really someone who genuinely believes that myths are the ultimate thing, you should expand beyond the Bible and ancient Greece.
The only thing I can think of there is maybe, and this is bullshit, but maybe he's going, well, this is a, you know, for a Western audience, and the Bible has been incredibly influential in the West, and the Greek myths too.
But he posits these
myths of fucking, you know, New Zealand.
He throws in like an Egypt there, but
he gets it wrong. He fucking gets it wrong.
Oh yeah, he gets it wrong all the time.
No, like he gets it diametrically opposed to right. Like he talks about was it fucking ISIS? And I think he was probably thinking of the fucking Islamic State. Like he was not thinking of the goddess ISIS.
Oh yeah,
and he's like, she was chaos. Because her husband's dong got cut off. It's like, no, she was the goddess of fucking order.
Oh, he can't say that.
That would go against his thing that he set up at the beginning and then proves with a bunch of shit he makes up.
She was like, he just gets it wrong. He does not know who she was.
This is like the first book we talked about yin and yang, where male and female, which represents order and chaos. Like, no, it's the duality of all things. You just put your shit in there that you don't know about, and you think that most people, because they don't, also don't know, and they'll be like, "Oh wow, they believe that over there." Like, no, they don't.
Yeah, that was the first book, right? Everything was the duality. It's like the yin and the yang, much like the hot pocket is both hot and cold somehow.
The hot cannot exist without the cold.
The center is frozen. The outside is the surface of the fucking sun.
I would love for him to write another book where it's just about the other myths, where it's like, well, make a room as beautiful as possible because God dipped his spear into the ocean, creating the great island nation of Japan, making a beautiful series of islands. It's like, what?
Have you guys ever read any of that Joseph Campbell shit?
The Hero's Journey thing?
Ripping off. No. You know, like, we all know the gist. I've never read it either. The Hero with a Thousand Faces and stuff. I don't know if Joseph Campbell only looked at Western myths, but clearly Jordan Peterson has, and since he's like a Xerox of that. But even he doesn't even like get into like Gilgamesh, like, which is a fucking bizarre story. It has nothing to do with the other myths. It would contradict him because Gilgamesh is fucking mad gay, dude. Like Gilgamesh and Enkidu. Remember that? We read this.
I would love to hear him say the word Enkidu.
Enkidu is, you know, basically he's the woman. He catches. But there's a line in the spark notes for the Epic of Gilgamesh where it's like, the one of the few female characters is like, she is the rare female presence in a mostly homoerotic story. He leaves that shit out. It's just like a weird buddy 80s action comedy the whole time. And they're like, who needs pussy when we could have adventure and cuddle? He never gets into that story. And that's the oldest one. Wouldn't that be worth looking at? The oldest fucking story?
No, because it's not the Bible. Because he's just a fucking Jesus freak, but won't say it out loud.
Did you catch any of the highlights, that word is being used loosely, of him debating Richard Dawkins?
Yeah. I saw the dragon thing.
I don't even know what I saw. I don't know what
it was. Where he's saying like, well, there's a dragon. It's like, do you mean like an actual dragon or like, you know, how the dragon symbolizes, you know, like oppression of people or something, or like the great predators? Like, no, like an actual dragon. I'm like, what the fuck?
It's a Komodo.
I had that in mind when I wrote when I copied down this quote from this book. Words are formulated collectively, and everyone must agree on their use. Not according to fucking the rest of this book.
Yeah, he did. There's a part in the debate where it's, I forgot the guy's name, some like young YouTube guy somehow like is in this circle of, yeah, his name's like Alex Connor or something like Connell, and they're both British, and they're very polite, but they're kind of like, what are you fucking saying? But like, you know, correct me if I'm bish-bosh, you're suggesting possibly, perchance, you know, to have some more, sir. And he's like, yes! And they're like, but what? And you can see their faces are so troubled. It's not making sense. But they're like, are you saying the Bible is divinely inspired? And he's like, yes, it is. And they're like, by what? How? Because there's evidence that the fucking book changed, that the Bible was a different, that the stories evolved. Clear evidence that they were written down one way, and later the famous bits got added in some cases. So do you mean that it was divine, when you say divine inspiration, you mean like humans? And he's like, yeah. He's like, well, that's not divine then.
Well,
that's
people. You know the rule, to write is human, but to edit is divine.
And divine is a tranny name often, and I don't really care for them.
And I'm going to call them whatever I bloody well want.
I want, yeah.
I will go to jail, and I will die for that. Like, no one's trying to put you in jail or kill you, my dude.
They do not have a First Amendment in Canada, so he could have gotten, like, in some trouble, I guess, theoretically, for that.
Well, actually, they do have a First Amendment, but it's not about the freedom of speech. It's like, about some random thing.
That's a good point. They don't have a good First Amendment. Theirs is like, and all our currency should have bullshit on it.
A duck.
I'm telling you, like, the $5 bill used to have kids playing hockey on it. It's a joke country.
Canadian First Amendment. The right to life, liberty, and security with reasonable limits.
That's peak Canada.
a way to stand up for something.
I'm pretty sure the 10 used to have a bottle of insulin on it in Canada. Another one has the Declaration. It just says like the Declaration of Rights of Man, and then it says it in French. He's like, le insulin. But yeah, he came to fame for a pretty dubious claim. And then.
And now we have to read this fucking book.
He did say at some point that he said, you know, if in a sensible world, my 15 minutes would have been up by now. He did say that. I read that somewhere today.
I believe that.
So that's the strongest argument for chaos ever. I mean, he made it himself. He's like,
this is just chaos. But that would make him an agent of femininity, and he is not that.
Well, you know, unless we're talking about pussy and one being what they eat.
then, which I also don't do. I'm a carnivore, but not that. No, thank you.
I like my steaks. I like my pussy bloody. Ew, Jordan, that's horrifying. That's not my... I can't be held responsible. If I said you had a bloody nice pussy, would you hold it against me? Ew. Ew, dude. I don't know. Why would you say that? Nate, who do you think should read it?
No one. Nope.
Was it better or worse than the first one?
Well, worse. Definitely worse. Because it made even less sense. And the first one did not make sense, but this was literally the ramblings of someone on some very strong medication. And
this was the B-sides of a Quora post.
Yes, good, yes.
It's exactly. The greatest name for an album I've ever heard. The lobster chapter made sense the whole way through. That was the first one. He started strong because it was like, it didn't really make sense, but like you understood what he was doing.
It had a train of thought. It focused on a point, even though that you could follow, whereas this, he's just rambling.
In this, he ran a train on our thoughts.
There were numerous things in it that were factually incorrect, but at least it followed a train. This was a train crash into another train, which was carrying other trains.
But now if these thoughts were on a bullet train, Nate...
Bullet train was better than this.
Oh God!
Oh, I didn't.
That was really terrible.
It was pretty bad. Oh,
I can't believe a book named after the fastest train was so dreadfully slow. You're like, oh my God! I just read another chapter. 3%. Fuck me!
I can't believe that a book about rules seemed to have none. On how it was written.
It's very meta. Get it?
Well, he did say at the beginning, you should know when to you become an exemplar by knowing when to break the rules.
Like Jesus.
Yes.
Oh, I did like that.
I guess the end result is eat meat, convert to Christianity, and don't attempt to fight for things you believe in because it's too vague. I swear some chapters were half Bible quotes. Like when you're trying to make your paper longer, so you just do lots of long quotes. Like, dude, this is just the Bible.
Who block quotes? Yeah,
I get a block quote. Oh, fuck yeah.
Are you block quoting the Book of Mark?
I just found another. I'm looking for a specific quote, but I found this other just great example of him using too many words where he goes, this is an actuarial problem, comma, a statistical problem, comma, a baseline problem, which I wrote, this is a good example of his preference for pleonasm, verbosity, and redundancy. He's like, those are the same fucking thing. Like,
you're telling me that this tub held a butcher, a baker, and a candlestick maker? I think not.
You're telling me a crab gooned in this rag?
I fucking hated this, and I'm glad it's done.
There's one. I just got to find this one last. I can't search. Oh, I like this. The second volume of Rowling's series proposes that predatory evil can be overcome by the soul willing to die and be reborn. I'm pretty sure if there's any book that said that, the bigger one was the Bible in this case. Isn't that the whole fucking Jesus story? Like the layup, the Jesus layup. And he's like, no, I'm going to lean into Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. When he points out, just unhelpfully, that Jenny, and it's like in parentheses, Virginny.
Virgin. I forgot about Virginny.
It's like, thanks, dude. That's gross.
First of all, we don't know that she was.
That is true.
She was at boarding school. British like boarding schools are like ground zero for child rape.
I like this quote. No one unwilling to be a foolish beginner can learn. It was for this reason, among others, that Carl Jung regarded the fool, capitalized, as the archetypal precursor to the figure of the equally archetypal redeemer, the perfected individual. I don't know what, but is he saying like Jesus started as a fool? Is it because he was Jewish?
I straight up think he's just talking about fucking tarot cards.
Which he doesn't understand that either. He just thinks
because like, they're open to interpretation. But not when you just say something is the right way to do it, even if it's not that, even if it can be interpreted multiple ways, only your way is right, which is all of his fucking statements.
Yeah, because he'll say, if you watch him talk or answer, and he's like, well, because like really the story of, fucking Artemis is about this. And like, is it? Prometheus is really about toaster strudel. Oh, okay.
We know that Goosebumps, the Beast from the East, is about the Goth invasions of Rome.
The Ostrogoths were from the East. That's why Theodoric the Goth noticed the connection with Theodore of the Chipmunks. Oh, shit. Does
and
the
what color was Theodore's onesie garment he wore? Blue. Which is representative of sadness and despair.
Simon was blue the Christ sound figure.
Like? Oh, no, Simon was blue, right. Theodore was green. Green for envy.
But their Armenian stepfather, who is a Coptic Christian, cannot understand.
Yeah. Dave Katrukian. What was his last name? Was fucking Armenian. What the fuck was it?
It was super Armenian. It's like Kardashian-Bashanashian or something ridiculous. It's not Dave Seville. That is...
It is Dave Seville.
It's like Dave Kevorkian.
Yeah, he was a doctor, but we don't talk about it.
Are you looking up what Dave Seville's real name was? It was not.
It was Dave Seville, but he's adopted, so their actual father was probably Armenian. He was an Armenian chipmunk.
Okay, hold on. Dave Seville was not his... David, that was his fake name. His name was Ross Bagdasarian. That was actually it. That's not me making up an Armenian name. Okay, so Nate, you seem to really enjoy the book. Anything else we missed? Or
you said, I can't believe we get to read this. I'm so excited.
The only thing I want to hide in the fog is my jizz-stained underwear from reading this book.
Do not hide it in the fog. That's the rule. Be proud of it.
I'm almost done reading this book, but that would mean stopping reading, which would be doing what I hate.
All right, gentlemen, so it's Christmas. I think it's time that the three wise men, such as we are, present the gifts to each other.
Hope you like shit, gentlemen. Jimmy, we punished you with this book. We teamed up against you. Would you like to go first and tell us your revenge?
Sure, I got DP'd this year, but...
DP'd by JPP, that's a lot
of... Yeah. That's Chuck Tingle book?
DP'd by my own DP.
DP is all the way down. So I thought, you know, should I go easy on you again? And I said, no. I don't think this book is not very long, but it's in the same vein as good old JBP. My only debate was to go highbrow or lowbrow. And depending on which, incredible author we were going to have to indulge in, and I decided to go lowbrow. So that's why this next year we will be reading a book by a man who once said, reading books is for losers who are afraid to learn from life, and then wrote a lot of books. Also a man who said, up yours, vile creature, to Elmo on the internet. We are going to be reading The Tate Bible by
Andy. Oh, no.
Oh, no. We're going to get on a list now.
Oh, yes. The Tate Bible.
We're going to have to give
the man who ruined the next generation of children.
Oh.
Good luck, fuckers. You know, I had to look up which one to read, and there were so many for a man who hates books.
That's impressive.
But that one seemed like the best.
I didn't know he wrote books.
Oh, well, you know, he says he might not. People who read books are gay. I mean, I read a little bit of it, and it certainly seems like it was just dictated to someone who typed out the things he was saying.
Speech, he just opened up a Word doc and it enabled speech to text or whatever.
He doesn't know how to do that because using computers is gay.
Oh, that's true. I mean, why do they call it RAM if it's not ramming a cock into your ass, Jimmy? Come on, everyone knows that.
Yeah. So we're going to have some fun with that. There you go. Have fun, guys.
All right. You know what? Okay. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, mine is not also not super long, but it's also not political this time, though that's definitely been a theme. I heard about this, and I was like, yeah, okay, that sounds really bad. My book is called My Immortal by Tara Gillespie.
Oh, my God. I almost picked that a few times.
Oh, really?
I know title.
This is the worst Harry Potter fan fiction.
This is legendary.
Yeah, legendarily bad.
I'm honestly excited to be reading this.
There's a deep bench of Harry Potter fan fiction. This is the worst.
This is the one.
It's like Wikipedia. According to Wikipedia, it is the work. The work takes its name from My Immortal by Evanescence, and then it also says My Immortal is popularly regarded as one of the worst works of fan fiction ever written, and 50 Shades of Grey was originally fan fiction. So. That's counted in there.
Wasn't it published as a series of forum posts?
It says it was fanfiction.net.
There you go. Yeah.
Yep. And there's actually quite a bit of controversy over who actually read it, who actually wrote it, I mean, because it could have been, because the username XXXBloodyWrists666XXX is the username that actually posted it. In 2006 to 2007. And who is that really? There's some debate.
This is the one where Harry Potter's goth and is like, is Draco the good guy?
Yeah, it's a goth girl. So it's a goth girl at Hogwarts. And how goth do you have to be to be goth at Hogwarts?
Very goth.
You really have to be goth.
Actual witches go there.
Who really is into Draco Malfoy, apparently. But it also completely ignores most of the what actually happens in Harry Potter. So,
and it's written in like 14-year-old AOL speak a lot.
Yep. I read the very beginning.
That's going to be a good one. I'm excited.
Bring me to life. I can't wait to read this Evanescence-inspired book. So I was inspired. I thought, you know, over the years, I've thought of like an Ann Coulter book would be a nice one to really upset Nate, especially. That's too easy.
Yep.
So then I listened to a debate with Ann Coulter and other people, and at the end they asked them, what's a book you recommend? And Ann Coulter recommended a book, and it wasn't Mein Kampf, and it wasn't one of hers.
Goat.
It was the pet goat, the George Bush book. So she recommended this book called The Camp of the Saints, which is a 1973 French dystopian fiction novel by a man named, I guess it's Jean Raspail, or however you pronounce that properly, which has been heavily criticized for, quote, it's conveying themes described as racism, xenophobia, nativism, monoculturalism, and anti-immigration content.
Is this like the French Turner Diaries?
It's Les Turner. It is a book where like Western civilization is undermined by mass immigration from the Third World. It's very popular with white nationalists, apparently.
Oh. It's on Marie Le Pen's top one book she's ever read.
Yeah. So that's The Camp of the Saints, which is apparently very direct. I could tell that's a direct translation because the French title is Le Camp des Saints.
Yeah, straightforward.
And the cover shows a bunch of ships in a thing and brown people walking.
So it's going to be great.
Oh, I just love that the synopsis starts with, in Calcutta, India.
First they came for our cigarettes, and there was no one to say anything.
Oh, my God. So, I picked that. I figured that would be upsetting, and no one would have thought of it.
It's a deep cut.
Very deep, you know.
I think these are all good picks, gentlemen. I'm excited for all of them. At least they're not fucking more Jordan Peterson or Ulysses.
Ulysses is a classic. A classic I forced us to read.
So, Merry Christmas.
Jordan Peterson is finished.
He's got
maybe he'll be more. Dead by the time this comes out. Probably not, but...
He has two more books we haven't done, so we could... It's still possible.
And kidney stones the size of softballs.
But if he puts out one more book, we have the chance to do a Jordan Peterson hat trick for a punishment book one year.
You see, a hat trick is a term in the Canadian sport of hockey, and they call it that because when you turn tricks, you're whoring yourself for points, which are representative of money, much like in the myth of the Minotaur, where she fucked a bull because she was interested in the bull's point system, and she wore a hat. The hat made her look like a bull.
Speaking of whores, Tim Horton is a treasure.
I like to take the cream out of my cream donuts and fill them with pure pork belly fat, because otherwise, what's even the point of living? Please kill me.
We're done with him. We've escaped. We never
have to do this again.
Don't say never.
Except Andrew Tate will make you think this was a work of actual scholarly genius.
I'm hoping that one's just so shitty. It's funny.
It's probably it's probably even more misogynist than the first one of these books.
The Tate Bible by Mr. Andrew Tate.
They call me Mr. Tate.
Oh, fuck me. All right.
Well, Merry Christmas, everyone. Fuck
us. Yeah. Merry Christmas.
These will probably be out for everybody, but maybe just on Patreon if you want to make sure you don't miss anything.
Oh, those are going to be out for everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody.
Maybe not Mike's.
No, yours will be for... Yours is going to be the best one.
Yeah, that one will be fun.
That's a classic. That's an internet classic.
But if you want to support the podcast, you can head over to patreon.com/drunkguysbookclub to give us monies and help us keep paying for these books that we definitely didn't pirate any of them.
I didn't give any money to Jordan Peterson. He doesn't need it.
Nor did I.
He has socialized health care. Fuck him.
Not in
Russia.
Russia, where he went, or probably some other failed state nearby.
Belarus.
I got outpatient care in Chechnya.
This HMO is killing me.
Which, it should be noted, HMO is just missing one O to make it really gay. it's just chaos.
They are definitely not in my network. And why don't you tell us what you thought? Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
You know what? You can follow us on X. I don't think we'll be updating anymore because I deleted it from my phone because it was making me too mad. But you could see what we used to write there. And that's fun.
Probably still find some fresh Nazi shit, though. You can find a lot of people who really like Jordan Peterson.
And a lot of people who really hate him. It's just become interesting.
Those people are just leaving.
To go to Threads.
Threads. Don't find us on Threads, because I'm not getting another fucking thing. But you can find us on Facebook, which people use, allegedly, and Instagram, which also people kind of use, at our name.
Yeah.
And go to Goodreads. Please. Please.
And check out the Hopped Up Network, a network of independent beer podcasters. And thanks for listening.